The Money Show.
Shapeshifters.
Tonight's shapeshifters had a colourful career. Hawker to Harvard. It's got a nice ring to it. Rally Mampiole is the chief executive of Padima Group Holdings. Rally, how did you get into the property game? It's a lovely story.
Good evening, Bruce, and good evening to your listeners. Thanks for inviting me. I was fortunate enough to have met a gentleman by the name of Charles Everett, who owns a real estate company called Chairs Everett, during my matric time. And I had a chat with him to find out what it entails to get into the real estate industry. And I was fortunate enough that a couple of months later, once I've graduated, he gave me an opportunity to start doing some drops. And for the olden days, before we could send, using the customer, systems of emails and others, we're doing drops in the northern suburbs of Bryanston and our hide away from dogs and all of those things.
you've got to go over the important bit here, and that is how to get the attention of somebody who is influential, who runs a big business, who clearly can help, but who may get approached by a whole lot of different people all the time. Some people are very good at being open to approaches. Other people are quite hostile to approaches. How did you make the connection with Mr. Everett that you did?
I think I was quite consistent in saying this is what I want to do. And he obviously said, look, Riley, you don't have a car. For an estate agent to sell houses, you need a car.
Where did you meet him? Did you just meet him in the street? Did you go to his office and harass him? What happened?
I was quite fortunate enough that I was studying at Rand Park High School here in Randburg. And, he stays down the road from close to the school. And I used to see his son, Paul Everett, and him quite often when I cycled to school. And I then had an opportunity to actually approach both of them in separate times. And I end up with the old man that actually gave me the chance. And he said, look, you don't have a car. Okay. I said, look, I'll do the drops. And I start by doing the drops. And I end up borrowing an old Cressida from my parents. And I started being an estate agent. And yeah, the rest is history.
The drops. What are the drops? I mean, this is something in the estate agency business. Clearly, that is very common. But for the rest of us, what are the drops? And is that like an entry level job?
Bruce, is actually a marketing, it's actually a sales and marketing jargon that we use in real estate. Basically, what you do, you drop the pamphlets, of saying Charles Everett sells properties in this area. These are the last sales. It's actually a marketing job that I started with, yeah.
How long did you do the drop job for?
I did that for about 8 months, and just a year later, I was fortunate enough to become an assistant estate agent, and I started selling properties with another agent. And that's where the whole story of Bureau of Austral started, because I needed to get extra income, because cash flow in real estate as an estate agent takes time. So you sell a property today, yes, you're going to make 20, 30,000 rand after 90 days. So within that 90 days, you still need to survive. So I started a small, I went to Kalami and I bought a bit of a bri machine, and I bought my first bit of us and I started selling there. And 2 months later, my sister started to help me, and we started to hire somebody else to do that for me. So that was, that helped me to be able to push and started to get into managing to buy my own car as well. And I started becoming a full-time estate agent.
But within 3 years, you running your own franchise, you get a franchise. I mean, that's pretty quick, isn't it, by anybody's standards?
I agree, Bruce.
Because you're 22 years old by now. You're a youngster.
Time, yeah. That's true, Bruce. So what happened is that I always say to people, you do not need money to make money in real estate, and sometimes also in some other industries. And it sounds really, really cliche, but what happened is that I went again to Mr. Everett. I said, Mr. Everett, I see that we don't have a franchise in Madrid. Can I please buy one franchise in Madrid? He said, Riley, you don't have the 1 million rand. It's almost equivalent then of buying a McDonald's franchise. How are you going to have a franchise? I said, well, can you give me the franchise and I'll pay later when I make money? And I was lucky enough that he agreed to that. We did a payment agreement. I got my brother and the CEO of Chairs Everett, Barry Davies, to buy 20% of the business. They raised the working capital. And I think within a space of 18 months, I had bought them out after we ran the franchise. And I end up owning the whole franchise 100%. And we also paid off the Everest because we were lucky to, I was actually lucky to sell a big developments that that I bought that time.
And again, okay, Bruce, okay, just to now, tell okay, you, now yeah. Explain to me again. You like to brush over things. I was lucky to sell a big development that I happened to invest in. It doesn't strike me as luck. I mean, yes, we all have luck, but you thought about something. You'd seen a piece of land. You'd become involved in the development. And then got to sell that development. That development sold out, which then earned you a nice big fat wad of commission, which is great. But that's not luck, that's strategy. And it was, you'd made a series of strategic decisions in that process, surely.
I agree with you, Bruce. I mean, you know, at that point in time, I didn't know that this is really what we call hard work. But now looking back, definitely you're quite right. And I was fortunate enough because the same principle that I did with Mr. Everett continued with this developer, Jerry Baker, where I basically, again, offered him 30 million rand for a development that I didn't have money. And it was during the good time before the NCR, NCA come in. And I managed to sell to different investors by empowering them to buy 3 to 4 townhouses or units that they can use for rental. And with the different sales, I then managed to get guarantees that I were more than 37 million rand. And I managed to pay back the Chess Everett franchise. I also did the guarantees back to pay the developer. And that's where it all started.
And this is quite high level stuff. I mean, you've not gone to university. You've not done applied maths. You've not got a business degree behind your name at this stage. How are you learning the art of the deal? Because you've developed for yourself a reputation in the property industry of being a deal maker. Is this just something that is instinctive to you?
You know, Bruce, that's quite a very touchy and quite an important question. I must just say to you, believe it or not, I did a 7-day training with the Everett's for sales. And that 7-day training changed my life to where I am today. And you will know that obviously at a later stage, I did go to UNISA and I studied for a BCom and I did my Harvard studies as well. But that 7 days, one of the training that I will never forget. But funny enough, at that time, I was reading a book called The Old Book of Robert Kiyosaki, you know, and all of those.
What, Rich Dad, Poor Dad?
Rich Dad, I can still say to anybody today, go back and buy the first versions of those.
Absolutely. It's the only decent book he's ever written and he's traded. Sorry, I mustn't be unkind. But it was a remarkable book and I've not enjoyed any of his others nearly as much, let's be diplomatic about it.
I agree.
As much as that book, which was, it was a life-changing book for so many people. And I suppose that was your MBA, was it?
It was my MBA and my 7-day training at Indian Park Ridge.
You then sold the franchise back to the family. What was the catalyst for that? You'd paid for it. You'd made your money. You then sold the franchise back to the family. Why did you want to get out of the property franchise business?
We were in the space where we were talking about black economic empowerment. A lot of deals were happening during those times. We could hear some of our role models, the Tokyo Juarez, were doing the BE deals. And obviously, I had some interest in arranging those type of opportunities. And I had to, unfortunately, sell the franchise so that I can look at other opportunities. And that's when we started the Parima Group Holding Investment. And obviously, we had a little bit of capital from the sale that we did of the development that we sold in Midrand. And I started buying a lot of land. And I was in an opportunity where I could start investing in small businesses within the real estate industry.
Okay, so now, again, brushing over the detail. The buying of land, what opportunity were you seeing that others were not?
So basically, what we did there, Bruce, was that there was a lot of opportunities of land within the Midrand area. This is, I mean, I stayed in Bonavelli and Midrand. This is even before the likes of Mark Corbett and the Mayors could actually do a development and attack here in Waterfall. So there was a lot of land around me when I was studying at UNISA. So I started buying land around the area. And also, I also bought a lot of stuff in the East Rand. And there was still, most of it was still agricultural piece of land. And we used that base to then create about 5-6 years later a fund of a 1 billion rand fund, which is now called, we created this fund called the South African Housing and Infrastructure Fund, where we basically wanted to accelerate delivery of affordable housing in South Africa.
Now, so the, I mean, the short name of that is SAHIF, the South African Housing and Infrastructure Fund. Take me through that, if you would, because that seems to be something quite remarkable in a private sector attempt to get more people into decent housing than happens at the moment.
Yes, Bruce. You know, so just before, you know, obviously sound like a nice story, but I might just say, you know, I said earlier on some of my friends that, you know, you can listen today, but I want to just say as well that, Bruce, it's important to know that throughout that process, there were failures as well. So we lost some money, we made some money, but we kept on going. But what happened is that I did a lot of deals. For example, we did a transaction where we, with the ATAC, the listed company here at Waterfall, where we bought an office block called Waterfall Point for a couple of hundreds of millions. And we then sold it back as well. But I then realized that obviously as an industry player, I got involved in small shopping centers, lost a bit of money, made money and all of those things. And I then later on realized that we are sitting in a country where at that time we were having about between 3 and 4 million rand shortfall in the housing. And I then always had an aspiration of getting involved in that space. So I left the whole sector of commercial, industrial, and the high-end industry of the Pam Goldings, the Ches Everett, to start this fund, which we call it the South African Housing and Infrastructure Fund. Where we saw the opportunity, Bruce, was that the listed companies that deal with affordable housing, like Cosmopolitan and others, and including the NGOs and the public government, they were struggling to turn the land around in a quicker time. So there have been times where you find that people have got budget to deliver certain units in a financial year, but they're not able to do that because the land is not ready. Money gets back to be given back to different managements, the treasury and funds, without spending it. And while people are still struggling with a bit of housing in the country. So we then created this fund. I had an opportunity to be joined by our CFO, who was the ex-CEO of Rebosses, Camille Keshaf. And he had the experience of understanding how to form funds and all of that, because I was coming back from a background of, you know, an estate agent, not understanding how to put things. So one of the things that I've learned is that always hire the smarter guys than yourself. So we put the fund together with Camille Keshaf and our team, and it was launched about two and a half years ago. And we raised money, and we also did some transaction with some farmers, and here we are. And we want to accelerate delivery of affordable housing in South Africa.
Who is the customer in the affordable housing market? I mean, is it the person who buys the house? Is it government? Is it a local authority? Who is it?
So our client, Bruce, is actually the end user. What we do is that before we used to buy land and we'll offload it to this listed company, NGOs, and some government entities, but we realized that the land still takes time for it to turn around. We then started to put the actual services so that the people, that the clients that buys, they get a ready-made land. So we sell to individuals. So we've got a program that we've just launched just in November that is called Housing Access Program. Basically, what we do, we're saying to anyone who works for government, who doesn't have housing, and anyone who doesn't have housing, they can contact us. We'll be able to come up. We've got different product, Bruce, that include things like incremental building, housing. We can sell the stand to the individual using an installment sale. We are able to use alternative building technology with the clients. We're able to clean up a client that it might be blacklisted and be able to help them. There's also a lot of funds that are available in the pension-backed fund where workers have saved money over the years. That they're not even aware that they've saved 40,000, 50,000 rand to 100,000 in their own capacity as government employees, and that they can use that money for a deposit. The banks are still scared to play in that space because they were banned a couple of years. I think this was in 2008. And I still think they're not aggressively playing in that space. So with this housing access program, we are going to be able to connect different individuals and connect the dots.
What motivates you? What drives you to do this work as opposed to a far simpler approach to, you could be running your own estate agency enterprise, but you're choosing a far more complex path to developing not only a business for yourself and for future generations of your family, no doubt, but providing access to people to get a roof over their heads. I mean, is that the motivation?
This is a motivation, Bruce, because, you know, after a while, when you push and you succeed in business and you still have a long way to go, you always think about what impact am I going to leave when I leave the sector that I'm in. And I really thought that the housing, it's a space that one can definitely be able to make a difference. You know, in this country, we're struggling. But one of the other things, which is quite funny, Bruce, is that I had an old man who had passed away. His name is Chris Labuschagne, and he worked with me in development, and he told me this about 10 years ago, and he said to me, Riley, if you want to live with the rich, build for the poor, and if you want to live with the rich, you must build for the rich. I mean, you must build for the poor. So,
no, exactly,
you know, there's also an opportunity there. But at the end of the day, it's not about the money; it's about the impact that we make. And we still have a 2 million shortfall housing in this country. We need to help our government to make sure that we don't have, you know, we can solve these issues. It's a crisis. We are having a housing crisis in South Africa.
Well, it's a housing opportunity, clearly. when it comes to the business opportunity in an economy like ours, in an economy where, if you look at the expanded definition of unemployment, we're approaching 50%. It just doesn't feel like an economy that can absorb much more sort of formal housing, that these sorts of projects that you are looking to develop and want to continue developing and helping people to find decent homes. Do we need different funding mechanisms? Do we need a different way of looking at this particular problem? Or can the system that you've developed keep functioning effectively?
Spot on. I did indicate earlier on that the banks are still a bit nervous in terms of getting into the space fully. They're trying, I must say. However, what we need to do is that, you know, I was fortunate enough to be in Boston at Harvard studying there, and I met a lot of different developers around the world. And the main thing is that we have a lot of people, Bruce, that are running small businesses in the country, in Tembisa, the lady that is selling tomatoes and potatoes. We need to make sure that we look after those people and understand how they make money. Somehow those people are earning 5,000-6,000 rand every month, and you can be able to build product that can suit them. So if you look at areas like India, that's what they do. They're actually using digital banking to make sure that they can be able to find out what these guys are renting and where they're renting, how much they're managing to rent, and be able to give them an opportunity for them to own a home. So the product of the housing access program, it'll be dealing with those type of things. We have family members that have started buying land, and they build a house over 5 years, 6 years. That's the reality of where we are as South Africans and Africa in all, you know, in its all totality. So it's important for us to understand how does the local people look at home loans and change that. So we're doing joint ventures with different home loans companies to make sure that we can respond to the entrepreneur that has got a butchery, that has got a small hardware in the townships, and manage to look after them and actually show them how to do incremental housing. And also, there's a lot of opportunities with microfinance institutions where they're quite expensive, but they also have some creative ways on making sure that they can finance that LSM.
Because, I mean, just the traditional idea of taking out the 20-year mortgage and paying off a fixed amount in every single month is increasingly unachievable to, you know, more and more people, simply because job security isn't what it was, and we do have to be creative. We do have to think of it more carefully. I mean, you say the banking sector is making an effort to do things differently, but are they open to experience, guidance, advice, leadership perhaps?
Yeah, I think we're busy engaging with them via the home loan division, home loans companies like Better Bonds and others. But the bottom line is that the reality of one of the reasons why we are having so many informal settlements is because we have not allowed some of the entrepreneurs and our people in South Africa to allow them to build houses over a period of time, but give them the right guidance, the right engineering, guide them and give them. And I can see that government has announced the rapid land release, and that's going to actually work very well because we will be able to guide that LSM to be able to say, look, this is what you could do in partnership with different hardwares. So incremental house building housing is one of the things that we need to try and see if that can make a difference versus just thinking that we can just give people housing. So there is a sector that can, there is a market that people can be able to buy. I mean, Bruce, let me just tell you now, if you look at the bedroom dwellers industry sector, it's a 10 billion rand industry with no formal player. No formal player. So the goggles and the guys that are doing the bedroom dwellers in Tembisa and Soweto are earning 10 billion. The Pem Golding and the Chairs Everett are earning 17 billion rand per annum with so many competition. So it's a space where we need more players to come in and actually formalize a space in terms of increasing bulk in the township and be able to go high rise to be able to deal with the affordable housing in South Africa.
My thanks to you. I was about to close. We've got 30 seconds, Raleigh. Your final point. I'm captivated.
My final point was, the final point is that for us to know what that market LSM is doing, we need internet. So we invested in a company called Metro Fiber, where we are giving internet to that market so that we can be able to do digital banking and others and be able to help them to be able to build their own homes by tracking their income.
There are incredible things happening in our economy, and one of the key players in making those incredible things happen is our shapeshifter this evening, Raleigh Mampeule. Thank you very much, Raleigh, for coming through for us this evening. Chief Executive at Padima Holdings, also the founder of Sahif and helping people find get housing. And I love this idea of incremental housing, this idea of building as you go.